Up next on Downtown, we talk with talented actor, director, writer, producer Mark Duplass, a great friend of the show for many, many years. His series, Room 104, begins its fourth and final season on HBO on Friday, July 24th, and we're so happy to have Mark back with us again here on the program. Mark, thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
We're doing okay. Yeah, interesting times we're in. How are you doing during the quarantine and everything else that's going on?
You know, relatively speaking, we are really, really fortunate, and I'm glad of that every day that we have our health, and we're fortunate to be able to work from home. All things considered, we're doing okay. Thanks for asking.
We're glad to hear that. Well, let's talk about Room 104. The final season gets underway Friday night, the 24th, and I'm looking at the preview of it and excited to see what's coming up, including another episode written and also this time directed by Lauren Budd.
Yeah, man, this is like one of my favorite things about our show is its ability to sort of foster and mentor up-and-coming filmmakers and up-and-coming voices. And Bangor's own Lauren Budd is, like, I would say a definitive example of when the show works, it really works well. Because, you know, when she was 19, she started interning with us and got very curious about Room 104. And then she wrote her first episode, which aired in season two when she was just 19, which is, I think, I'm one of the youngest actual writing credits on an HBO show in history. And then this season, she wrote and directed an episode called Hikers that it's actually an episode that it's an idea for one that I've had for a long time, but I haven't felt like I was the right person to do it. It's really about these two young post-college grad girls who decide to hike the Appalachian Trail, and it reveals a bunch of problems in their friendship. And that's another thing that I just love about this show, which is I can have an idea, realize that I'm not the best person to do it, and I can tap somebody like Lauren to partner with and hand it over to her. And you know, it's one of my favorite episodes of the season. And so I'm just so proud of her and it.
Looks like we'll also get to see you as, shall we say, a mysterious musician?
I think that's fair to say, yeah. I star in an episode which is entitled The Murderer, which is, it's a fictional episode about a fictional singer-songwriter who released this sort of hit record in the 90s in the underground scene and then disappeared, you know, almost like that documentary Searching for Sugar Man. And then these group of fanboys spies him one night and he agrees to play the entire record for them in Room 104 if they will bring a keg of Keystone Light beer for him. so it's sort of, almost like Fargo-like comedic thriller episode about meeting your heroes and finding out things that you never wanted to find out about them.
That sounds great. Who are some of the other faces that we'll see on this fourth season?
Man, this is a really fun season to make because not only were we able to bring in a lot of people that we have wanted to work with for a while, Dave Bautista, who is just, I think, one of the more underrated actors out there. We all know him as a huge, you know, wrestler and movie star in Marvel movies and such, but he puts in a dramatic performance in this that I just didn't know he had in him. And Jillian Bell from Brittany Runs a Marathon joins us this season. And one of the real fun things, I think, about season four for me was cracking different forms and different ways of telling stories in Room 104. I mean, we have an episode that's fully animated. We have an episode that's done mostly with dolls and mannequins. We have an episode that is in the 80s sitcom format. So we just kind of, knowing this was probably going to be our last season, we just kind of, we did the senior year thing, which is like, well, I'm already in college. They can't fail me, so let's just go for it.
Well, that's been one of the great things about this series is you've got this premise of the single motel room, and that has left it open to so many different interpretations. And I think it's just been a wonderful ride, and I'm excited for the new season, but sad to see it come to an end.
Yeah, you know, we were bummed to see it come to an end, but I think, honestly, our perspective is the way the TV works now is there's so much stuff out there, right? You probably, like everyone else, have 500 movies and TV shows on your queue that you want to get to. So unless you're really a big hit after the first season, you pretty much get canceled. And the fact that HBO let us make this very strange late-night show with full creative control, they let me cast whoever I want in front of the camera and give jobs to first-time filmmakers like Lauren. But in particular, you know, when we started the show, like, and it's still a problem, like the preponderance of women and persons of color directing TV is just still low. And so they let us do so much with this, and they gave us 4 seasons. So I'm trying to take the high road opinion of, you know what, I'm not going to be fussy that I don't get any more. I'm going to be grateful that I was able to have this ride.
Season 3 was terrific, and I think I was most excited to see your creep partner, Patrick Bryce, involved in several episodes.
Yeah, he's been such a great collaborator of mine through the years, and really one of my close friends, and that really is true for the whole show. You know, Julian Wass is a producer this year, and he's the person I make my musical episodes with, because he started off as the composer of the show and really kind of got promoted into, you know, the writing and producing chair from there. And I really try to, you know, when I'm talking to younger filmmakers or people who are interested in making TV, like, building that family environment of trust around yourself is critical. And you don't always get it right. You don't always get lucky. You know, we had it on the league, honestly, because it was all of our first big jobs, and we felt like freshmen in college, and we all bonded up, and we've been close ever since. And we had a lot of it on Room 104 too.
We're talking with Mark Duplass on Downtown. I have to bring up your role as Chip Black in The Morning Show, such a wonderful series. And just within the frame of season 1, the development of your character as a good guy, maybe the moral center of the show, but by the time we get to the end of the season, Chip's got the realization that, you know, maybe he hasn't done enough along the way.
I think that's a really astute analysis of Chip, and it's something that I've been thinking a lot about lately is, what does it mean to be on the right side of the story and the right side of history? And I think for a long time, particularly, you know, white males in positions of power, they have just rested comfortably on the idea that as long as they're not doing anything bad, they are a good person. Mm. And I think that there's a theory now that's coming around that is, you have to be actively stopping those bad things. You have to be actively fostering a culture that is intolerant of those things if you have a position of power. And if you don't, maybe you shouldn't be in a position of power. And I mean, Chip has that realization in the middle of season 1, which I think that's a really interesting arc, you know? And I think everyone that I know who is experiencing whatever relative position of power they have, what is the right thing that they can do, you know, in the midst of last year's Me Too surge, in the midst of, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, and what's your place going to be? And I think everyone's rethinking that, and I think that's a really painful thing, but a very good thing.
And you've talked about bringing this into your own professional life and Duplass Brothers Productions, and well, you've done a wonderful job by getting new people into the business and giving them opportunities, but you look to expand your horizons and your efforts too.
Yeah, I think, you know, Room 104 is actually, I think, a really good example of the direction we would like to head as a company. You know, it's a show that's not about me and Jay's personal vision. It's a show about us partnering with those people whose voices have been underrepresented for whatever reason. And what it allows us to do is to be, you know, less of, oh, this is the Coen brothers and their vision. It's more of, you know, I call it uncle energy, really. It's like, I want to be able to give people their first shot. And Room 104 has been, you know, this wonderful springboard for people who, you know, Sarah Smith got her first directing job with us, and then she went off and directed 2 seasons of that show, Hannah, for Amazon, and signed a huge deal there. And Janae Lamarck started with us, and then she was gone on to direct, you know, 10 other episodic television shows. And so, you know, I think if I'm doing the best I can do, I think I'm giving people a lift, but I'm also giving the right people a lift who definitely need that and who haven't had that before. So, you know, it's a large conversation happening everywhere. We're a small part of it. We're just trying to do our best.
Your chemistry with Jennifer Aniston is so great in the morning show. Is that something that can be done through writing, through acting, or does there have to be some sort of personal connection there to really make it come through?
That's a really good question. I think I don't have the answer for that, but I know that, my wife, Katie, who obviously also grew up in Maine, one of her real strengths is she can create chemistry with a brick wall. I mean, you put her in with anybody, and it's amazing what she can do. I don't have that level of skill, or maybe it's because she's such a deep empath, but in the case of Jen Aniston and me in the morning show, we, I think, got really lucky because we just very much like each other. And there's a giddiness because we had been wanting to work together for quite a few years that really helps buoy that relationship, because in the show, obviously, we're pretty terrible to each other sometimes, So you really want that baseline chemistry to make it a stomachable relationship to watch. I'm excited to see where we go in season two and where Chip's character goes, because, he clearly has a torch for her in some way, shape, or form that he has not really dealt with. And he's also lost all of his power. And what does it mean to be, a white male who once had power and had that taken away? I think that's really, if you got to tell a story these days about a white male, then that's probably the better version of it.
Did you guys get to shoot any of next season's episodes before the shutdown?
Yeah, we were on about episode 2 when we safely shut down, thank God. And I know that Carrie Aaron, our showrunner, is working on some rewrites with this downtime because, it's funny. It's like history repeats itself. In season 1, they wrote almost a whole season, and then the Me Too movement happened, and they rewrote all those scripts in order to incorporate the Me Too movement, and she felt like it was important. So I don't know exactly what she's doing, but I know that she is incorporating where we are now in some way, shape, or form into what will eventually become season 2. And I am just as curious as you are as to what that's going to be.
What's next in your relationship with Netflix and HBO?
It's great these days, honestly. We feel so fortunate, particularly to have a home at HBO where they let me make things like Room 104 and Animals. What we're trying to do right now as a company is really make things that feel impactful. And I know that sounds kind of generic, but I think when you really think about it, it comes from two places. I don't need to clutter up anybody's Netflix or HBO Max queue with more shows that are just middling and like other things that have come out. If we're going to make something, we want to make it count. That's really important to us. And we're thinking a lot about how we can be making things safely inside of the pandemic. And what's fun about that is that it really is a return to our roots when we, came up to Millbridge and Bangor and shot the Puffy Chair 15 right. years ago. We didn't know what we were doing. We were kids with a camera, and we just made it up as we went along. And it is kind of even the playing field right now, because without the ability to return to traditional production anytime soon, everybody needs shows and movies to air. And anybody can swing their bat and make it work. So it's a little bit of a return to form for us of, how do we make movies inside of our homes or through video conference, literal found footage movies, radio plays on podcasts. So we're getting really creative with that stuff and just trying to have fun with it.
When you talk about helping lift people up, I saw this week your partnership with the Northwest Film Forum to honor the wonderful talent and great friend and collaborator of yours on films like Comte and your sister's sister, Lynn Shelton, and the Of a Certain Age grant. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, my friendship and my creative partnership with Lynn was really special for me on many fronts. We could go on for hours about it, but I think that what was very unique about Lynn is that she didn't make her first feature film until she was almost 40 years old. And I think that there is, for whatever reason, a little bit of ageism in the film industry. It's looked at as, who's the young up-and-coming filmmaker. We always say that without even thinking about it. And we thought it would be really nice to honor her legacy. And because she's not around to continue it, we could continue for her support, you know, in particular for women who are 40 and over, so that they can have their chance to do what Lynn did. And I mean, who better to tell an empathetic, beautiful human story than someone who has lived longer and has those experiences? And so, you know, we sort of generated this idea that there would be a yearly grant for a woman in that zone, so that she could get to make her first movie. And we thought it would be small, you know, and we put up some money for it. And then as soon as we started talking about it, people just started pouring in. So we ended up collaborating with a much larger circle of people. And now we have $25,000 a year to give to someone to have their first shot when they're, you know, at least expecting it, because that really was Lynn, you know, and she was able to do so much with it.
I loved all her films, and we were so lucky. We got to talk with her last summer after the release of Sword of Trust, and she was just one of those people that even over the phone, 5 minutes in, it was like we had known each other for 10 years.
Yeah, talk about a chemistry generator. I mean, Lynn really had that, and she really had that light. And, you know, what's so wonderful about Lynn is that there was a there was sort of an effervescence to her that our industry tends to beat out of people, for better or worse, you know? And she maintained that excitement and that enthusiasm. And I think that in that way, she's a very good model for people to be around. And she was a really great mentor and never forgot where she came from. Would always take the email or the phone call for someone asking for advice who didn't, you know, she wasn't going to benefit from them. She did it only to help. And I really want to try to continue that legacy as much as I can.
Mark, your social media presence has always been so very positive, and we've talked about it before. We're so divided in this country right now. The fact that wearing masks has become a political issue. How do we get to the other side of this? And I guess, how do we welcome people back when it's all over?
You tell me, man. I would love to know. I don't really know, you know. I do ultimately, you know, in my core, I'm like a person who was raised as a Catholic and a Christian. And although I'm not practicing now, like, that made an indelible mark on me. And the tenets of treat others how you want to be treated is just something I try to hold on to in my deepest confusion. And I hope it comes back, and I hope things swing around. And I don't really know what's going to happen, obviously, but I can't not remain hopeful, because it is the essence of my personality, and because also I'm a dad and I have kids in my house and I want them to see that.
By the way, our producer Carrie is now a New Orleans homeowner.
Really?
Yeah. Have you got any advice for him? Because he's waiting for his daughter to graduate from college, and then I think he's out of here. And Carrie, are you ready to become a full-time New Orleans resident?
I am, yeah. We bought a house back in 2018 over near City Park.
Oh my God, that's so beautiful over there. I mean, I can't tell you the memories that I have. There's a Thanksgiving Day 5 mile race that we used to do as a family, because, you know, in New Orleans, you know what you're going to do to yourself the rest of the day, so you try to get your run in before that happens. And it's right there through that park, and I went to middle school in that park, and played tennis with my dad. He taught me how to play tennis out there. I mean, look, New Orleans is a city that obviously I love so much, because I grew up there. I haven't spent a lot of time there recently because my parents, you know, they moved out to California to be near us and all the grandkids and such. But the spirit of that city, man, and the ability to live, you know, a life that is, I think, at its core, steeped in family and enjoyment, as opposed to the standard North American values of, you know, capitalistic success. I've always loved that about New Orleans. It, in many ways, it feels like one of the most, it's just one of the most laid back cities we have here. So I hope you go there, and I hope you, you know, overeat a lot for the first 2 or 3 years, put on like 30 pounds, and then reel it back. That's basically what happens.
Yeah, that's the big danger once you get there. Yeah, what you said is exactly right, and that's why me and my wife ended up going, you know, getting a place there. There's just a feeling, even as a tourist, when we were going and visiting, there's a feeling of welcomeness in the city that is just overwhelming.
Yeah, and you know, there's this thing that I've always loved about this guy Ram Dass, who's just this wonderful thinker, and he always says, you know, life, the secret of life is simple. We're all just walking each other home. And when I think about that, I think about New Orleans, because that is a city, man, where people are just like, I could destroy myself trying to get some sort of massive ego-driven career or achievement, or I can just get my people and get some good food and some good drinks and go swimming and take a walk. And that is, that's not a bad way to live. So I hope it goes well for you.
Oh, appreciate it.
That sounds like a pretty good plan for all of us. Mark, we're looking forward to Room 104, Friday the 24th. Final season premieres on HBO. Always great to talk with you. Thanks so much. And give our best to Katie and stay well.
All right. Take care of Bangor for me. Thanks, guys.